I finally stopped shaking and actually felt a little warmer. That episode scared me, I'm not going to lie. It was a moment of clarity when I suddenly realized we could die out here. This wasn't sleeping under a bridge next to a town like we'd done in Europe. We were stranded high up in the mountains, pretty far away from any kind of help if something were to happen. We were unprepared for the colder mountain air, even after the purchases we'd made in Perth. We had to get down to lower ground the next day. I was sure of that. The next morning, Aaron woke up and stretched. Man, did you think it got a little cold last night? I was freezing my balls off. You don't even want to know. Before heading to flat ground, we decided to hike the rest of the way up the mountain to Mount John's Observatory. It didn't look like much farther up to reach the peak where the observatory sat. We made sure most of our gear was tucked away under the green canopy and started heading up. There was a large section of the mountain that was covered in rock. We figured this would be the easiest way up, considering the brush in all the other directions was pretty thick. It turned out to be even thicker than we thought just before the rocky area, and after a grueling 200 yards or so, we were forced to turn around and backtrack. Thistles and nettles dug into our skin and left us with no choice. We were already exhausted and out of breath from pushing our way through the thick brush, but it really didn't look like much farther to the top. We backtracked almost completely back to camp before cutting sideways across the mountainside and back up to a different section of the rocks. Here we were able to force our way through the brush and start climbing up the granite. Before we knew it, we were gasping for air and lying on the rocks. The thin mountain air was noticeably bereft of oxygen and, well, smoking cigarettes didn't help us out either. "Why the fuck are we doing this?" I asked between gasps. "Because we're stupid assholes." You're a stupid asshole for making me do this. This was your damn idea. Ah, fuck. Just throw me off of this goddamn mountain. It would be a sweet release from this pain. You ready to, keep moving? Yeah, let me just finish this cigarette first. It turned out that the hike was much longer than we thought, and it took several more cigarette-slash-asthma-attack stops before making it to the summit. We visited the cafe at the observatory where we enviously watched tourists drink expensive coffee and eat pastries, and then I went to the bathroom and filled up our water bottles from the sink. After quickly realizing that the decision to climb up the peak of that stupid fucking mountain had been pointless and unfulfilling, we opted to head back down to camp. There we rested for a moment, packed up our stuff, and then climbed the rest of the way down the mountain. Once we reached the trail at the bottom, we started hiking around the lake towards a potential new campsite on the opposite side. We had spotted a wooded area that looked to be secluded from any nearby housing and which would be on flatter ground. The hike that day totaled something like 4 or 5 miles around the lake, not including the dumbass idea to trek up the mountaintop like we were goddamn crack hour. The trail around the lake led to a dog walking park and then a large group of pine trees. It was the latter which we slipped into in search of shelter. We walked around several of the trails in the area before one of us spotted what looked like a suitable location. There were either fallen trees or small hills on all sides of us, creating somewhat of a natural vagabond nest, if you will. We had no view this time, and the boredom was even worse than before. My thoughts turned over and over in my head and started to become dark and depressing. There is such a thing as too much time to think. I'll elaborate. Most people spend a large portion of their day doing something that occupies their thoughts, whether it's work, family, friends, hobbies, or even just watching TV. Usually the only time a person is just sitting and thinking about things is right before they go to sleep. Even then, it's usually thoughts about the next day, problems in your relationship or with money, something like that. Imagine you have none of that to occupy your time. No friends to talk to, no family to take care of, no job to go to. Imagine you're so secluded that there is absolutely nothing on your to-do list either. There's only one thing you can do to pass the time. Think. About what, you might ask? Well, I'll tell you. Everything. What does life mean? Why the fuck am I here? Am I wasting my life? Am I going to die out here? If I did, what would my funeral be like? Who would be there? Would my friends say nice things about me? Fucking dark shit. I was becoming thoroughly depressed, anxious, and downright paranoid. Morbid thoughts plagued over me, and I was sure that I would somehow die before returning home. Maybe Aaron would die. What would I tell his parents? I thought I was going fucking crazy. All I did all day was think. I began to wonder if this was human nature, that after all of the distracting thoughts which fill a person's mind, family, relationships, work, etc., are gone, is the meaning of life and death all that are left to ponder? I thought of Christopher McCandless, who I mentioned a couple of chapters back. When he died in an abandoned bus in the Alaskan wilderness, he hadn't had any human contact in months. He died slowly, of starvation, and had nothing but time with which to think about life. One of his last journal entries was scribbled between the lines of a book. Happiness only real when shared. Now that can be taken a number of ways. But I think what he meant by it is what I felt on that mountainside. If you don't have someone to share your happiness with, is it really even there? What's the point of life without other humans to enjoy it with? Without things to distract us from our fates, all we're left with is our fates to contemplate. I wondered if I was alone in this typhoon of emotions and this subsequent epiphany I was having. I asked Aaron at one point, "Hey man, have you been having like real weird thoughts since we've been out here? Like, I don't know, about, like, life and death and shit. I just keep having morbid, weird thoughts floating through my head." "Dude, I thought I was going fucking crazy. I can't stop thinking about all kinds of shit. It's fucking weird. We need to get the fuck off this mountain." "Yeah, definitely." That evening, we stashed all of our gear in the bushes and covered it with pine needles. We walked a couple of miles to a little cafe and bought a cup of coffee each in exchange for Wi-Fi use. Abby and her roommates had agreed to let us stay in their house again before our flight back to Auckland left in a few days. I sent her a message asking if we could come back a little early. I was sure it wouldn't be a problem. Then I sent an email to Naked Bus asking if we could change our return ticket to the next day. I received an email back within the hour that notified us the change had been made. We were very grateful to see such customer service compared to what we'd experienced with Jetstar. We were almost completely out of money, so buying new tickets would have been out of the question. We had enough for food and tobacco to make it until our flight to LA in a week or so, and our return flight to Auckland was already paid for. We had roughly $80 left to our names after the cup of coffee we had just bought. That was the grand total of everything. My bank account, cash on hand, everything. I hoped that would get us back without trouble. Another moment of good news arrived when I checked my Facebook and saw a message from Blake. "Allie and I are coming to pick you up in LA. We're leaving the day after Thanksgiving, so we'll see you about 3 days after that." Aaron and I were toasting our coffee cups again. They had come through, and it was a huge weight off of our shoulders. After we finished our coffee and lounged around on Wi-Fi for a while, we walked back to our camp, after a dinner of, you guessed it, rice and tuna, and lounged around talking about plans for when we returned home, plans for future traveling, and laughed about all of the shitty things we had been through together. That evening I started to feel sick and eventually decided to lie down a little earlier than usual. I had a splitting headache and chills, but didn't have a fever, fortunately. As I lay in my sleeping bag, head once again spinning, I longed for a warm shower and a real bed. My only solace was that I would finally be leaving this goddamn mountain the next day and off to a real bed. Then, in a few more short days, I would be on a plane to LA where I'd be welcomed to a room and a bed at my Aunt Donna's house. I imagined the coffee. Real coffee whenever I wanted it. Cheeseburgers. Real cheeseburgers. Food and cigarettes and beer and, did I mention coffee? And a real bed and toilet. Was there really much more to life than that? Then another thought hit me. Aaron would be flying to his grandpa's house in Phoenix only a few days after our arrival in L.A. For the first time in 5 months, I would be alone. No one to answer to, no one to share the money I had earned with, no one to ask me, when are you shutting that light off, or do you really think you should spend money on that? I fantasized further, another month ahead, when I would be home. I imagined walking into a store with a wallet full of money. I'd buy a six-pack of beer and a pack of Camels. I wouldn't feel bad about spending money at all. I'd put gas into my car and drive home. Not walk, not hitchhike, not have to figure out a train system. I'd fucking drive myself there. The easiest shit in the world compared to what I had now become used to. 1 month. Just 1 month and I'd be free to do as I please again. End of chapter 32. Chapter 33. Last Minute Tragedy. Christchurch, New Zealand and Auckland, New Zealand. Two roads diverged in a wood and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Robert Frost. November 15th. We arrived back in Christchurch sometime the next afternoon. The first thing we did was walk a mile or so to the Pallet Pavilion to jump on Wi-Fi and see if Abby had messaged me back. Our spirits were elated at the thought of a shower that night. We talked about these types of comforts during our walk to the pavilion. Once we arrived there, I connected to the Wi-Fi and checked my messages. I saw one from Abby. "So sorry," it said. "My flatmate has people here tonight, so Saturday and Sunday night would be better. I hope you find somewhere warm to sleep." We were devastated. We'd have to sleep on the streets again. "I swear somebody cursed this fucking trip, man," I complained. "No shit, man. Nothing but bad luck since the very beginning." I knew it wasn't Abby's fault or even her roommates, so we couldn't really be angry with them. They were doing us a huge favor by letting us stay there, as well as feeding us and doing our laundry. It was our fault for once again doing things last minute and for being so broke in the first place. Pallet Pavilion was shutting down for the day, and we set out walking across the city in search of a place to sleep for the night. We ended up at a small shopping mall at first. We were really in search of more Wi-Fi, more than anything. It was still hours until dark. We connected outside of the place and spent a few hours writing in our journals or playing around on Facebook and eating peanut butter sandwiches. The hours dragged on. Eventually darkness fell and we set out to find a place to bed down for the night. We checked out a few places, an abandoned lot, a small bridge near a park, the park itself, before settling on a weeded area next to a public garden. The ruins of a crumbled little stone building lay next to us. The weeds rose up high around us. Neither of us bitched. We simply cooked up some rice on the corner of the old building's foundation and then laid down in our sleeping bags for the night. I slept poorly because of heavy traffic nearby and woke around 8 a.m. to see Aaron already up and making coffee. "Traffic?" I asked him. "Fucking light, man. Been up for an hour or so." "Traffic got me. All night with that shit." "Yeah, it was bugging me too. 3 more days. 3 more fucking days, man." Afterwards, Aaron once again wanted to sit there and stare at the grass while I opted to go ahead and go to Pallet Pavilion and get on Wi-Fi. That little patch of grass was miserable. I had no idea why he wanted to sit there. I had long since stopped waiting around for him when it came to stuff like that, though. I just did my own thing and he caught up later. Abby met us at the bus stop around 2 p.m. and wanted to show us around the city. We were both thoroughly exhausted after sleeping so poorly the night before, coupled with our ordeal in Tekapo, and told her we'd rather do it the following day if possible. She told us that would be perfectly fine. "How'd you enjoy all the exciting fun in Tekapo, boys?" Jimbo joked when he got home that evening. "Oh, fuck off, man," I laughed. "We didn't realize there was nothing but the lake there. I was wondering, I thought, what in the fuck are these kids going to do down there for a week? They'll snap their own fucking heads off in boredom." "Yeah, that's basically what happened." We had beers with them late into the evening and went to sleep rather early. The next day, Abby showed us around the city. At the risk of sounding redundant, it really is incredible what the community did in that city after the earthquake hit. You could tell that everyone really came together and made stuff happen to rebuild, and you could tell it really left everyone changed for the rest of their lives. There were still spray paint marks on many buildings from rescue teams who had marked them cleared of any trapped survivors. Recycled materials were used everywhere. I loved that city. On our final morning, Janita gave us a ride to the airport. We were sad to say goodbye to our new friends, but we were more than excited to finally be heading home the next day. This flight would take us back to Auckland, where we planned to pick up the stuff we had left at the Kiwi Backpackers Hostel. We would find a place to spend the night around the area. Hint, it wouldn't be in a hotel or hostel. And then catch a shuttle back to the airport and fly 13 hours to Los Angeles. Janita bade us goodbye and took off while Aaron and I smoked a quick cigarette before entering the airport. We were right on time with about 45 minutes left until our flight north. After our smoke, we walked into the airport and approached the woman at the counter. I gave her our confirmation number and she looked up our tickets. We set our bags up to be checked and she looked at us confusedly. You don't have any checked bags on this ticket, you know. Huh? We don't get checked bags? Aaron asked. No, if you want to check bags, it's $70 for each bag. My heart sank. Wait, what? What if we don't have the money for that? Jeez, you have to either miss your flight or leave one of your bags. Well, we're obviously not doing that. My brain started racing erratically in panic. Suddenly, the half hour we had remaining until our plane departed seemed like 30 seconds. There was no time to call someone and have money wired or transferred to my bank account. We had $80 total. That was it. No emergency reserves, nothing. There has to be something we can do, Aaron pleaded. Well, if you can somehow fit those bags in the carry-on compartment, you'll be okay. It just can't weigh any more than 16 kilo, which is about 35 pounds. I shot a look at Aaron and wanted to angrily remind him how it would have been a good idea to leave his fucking baggies full of dead batteries, rocks, and sticks back in the hostel in Auckland, as I'd asked. We both knew his was easily double that. But there was no time for bickering. Problem number two was that his bag actually weighed too much even as a checked bag. I told him he better quickly go through and find whatever he can afford to throw away. I ran over to the test carry-on compartment and crammed my pack into it, literally stomping it with my foot to make it fit. Here, I motioned for the woman at the counter. Is this cool? Yep, you're good. Just have to get his bag weight down and you'll be all set. She was incredibly nice and helpful through all of this. I can't imagine what would have happened if we'd had an unfriendly associate when this happened. I'd probably be typing this from a Kiwi prison. There's not really anything I can throw away, Aaron stammered. I thought of the bags of rocks and shells that were in his bag, but I didn't say anything about it. I knew they were his souvenirs to take home, and I couldn't ask him to toss them. The food, I finally offered. We have to dump the food. There was no time to argue. I grabbed everything in his pack, a bag of apples, cans of tuna, a bag of rice, everything except for one half-empty jar of peanut butter, and I threw it into the trash can. I hate to do this to you, the woman at the counter winced as she spoke, but you can't take the guitar as carry-on. You'll have to buy a seat for it. What? I was dumbfounded. Hang on, though, I might be able to help you out. Anything you can do, I will love you for it. Okay, it looks like if I use my employee discount, I can buy a spare ticket in my name for $5. Will that work? We have exactly $80. So 70 for the check bag and 5 for the guitar? No taxes or other fees? Yes, $75. That's the total for everything. All right, well, I don't think we have much of a choice. I handed her my debit card and watched as she wiped out the remainder of our money with a few presses of a button. We were broke, just threw away all of our food, and still had over 24 hours before our flight departed to Los Angeles. We boarded our flight with just minutes to spare and made the short ride to Auckland in no time. When we arrived back in the familiar airport, we were easily transported back to the Kiwi Backpackers Hostel by their shuttle. I grabbed our bag from storage after saying hello to the same girl who was working the counter a couple of weeks earlier. I need to arrange a shuttle to the airport tomorrow, I told her. All right, will you be needing a room tonight then? No. But you need a shuttle tomorrow? Yeah. So where are you staying tonight? Somewhere out there, I motioned to the outside. We don't have any more money. Jetstar is apparently the worst airline in the history of airlines. They screwed us again on our flight back up here, and it pretty much wiped us out. Ah, it's terrible. I'll tell you what. Don't worry about paying for the shuttle tomorrow. You normally had to pay $10 for the shuttle if you weren't staying at the hostel. I had planned on figuring that out when the time came, probably by straight up begging for money from people. That would be so helpful. Thank you so much. You've been so great to us. Nah, no worries, man. Just never take me traveling with you. I think you have the worst luck I've ever seen. I laughed. Don't even get me started. After walking out of the hostel, Aaron and I searched for a place to spend the night. Out of the 14 days we had spent in New Zealand, only 4 had been under a roof. The rest were all spent on the streets or in the mountains. This night would be no different. We still had quite a bit of time to kill before we could head anywhere to sleep, so we spent this time sitting at a picnic table in the foyer of an apartment complex. Ryan had given me a book before we'd left Oz, so I was alternating between doing language lessons on my phone and reading it. I'd left the book with my belongings in Auckland, and let me tell you, I had regretted that over and over again when we'd been bored out of our minds in Tekapo. Aaron was sketching in his notebook. At one point, Aaron made a trip to the grocery store and used our remaining $5 to buy a loaf of bread. All we had was that and the last bit of peanut butter. It would need to be rationed in order to get us through the next day. It seemed to take an eternity for darkness to finally come to Auckland that evening. Time was going slower and slower. We packed up our things and laid them down on the side of an apartment building. There just weren't any places better than that, at least that we could see. This is the last time I'm going to have to do this, I thought. I pulled my sleeping bag over my eyes and fell asleep. I was woken around 6:30 a.m. I hadn't slept very well. I had been worried about police or someone else finding and bothering us in such an exposed area. I could feel rain pattering against my face. It had apparently been raining for at least an hour because my sleeping bag was damp already. The first beams of light were beginning to shine over the apartment buildings. Aaron, wake up, I said as I nudged him. It's raining. Motherfucker. Yep, sounds about right, huh? He groggily rubbed his eyes and stared at the grass for a moment. Pretty much. We headed back to the shelter of the foyer and laid our sleeping bags out on the concrete to dry. Boredom once again struck us, along with pangs of hunger, which seemed to almost always coincide with one another. Unfortunately, we only had about 2.5 sandwiches worth of peanut butter left. We each had a slice of bread for breakfast. Around that time, one of the apartment doors opened and an older, sharply dressed Filipino man stepped out. Hey, boys. You all right out here?
Yeah, Aaron answered. We had to sleep outside last night and the rain woke us up.
I see. No money, didn't I take it?
I've been there before. I'm making some coffee. Would you do like some?
I turned around and my face lit up.
Coffee?
Yes, I'll take that as a yes. Give me a few moments then.
We'd had to throw out the rest of our instant coffee with the food at Christchurch Airport. We were in desperate need of something to boost our morale at that moment. The man returned a few moments later with 2 cups of hot coffee.
Here you go.
You are an amazing person, I told him as I sipped the delicious black liquid. He laughed and then walked back into his apartment, returning a couple seconds later with 2 croissants.
Yeah, take these as well.
Thank you, man, Aaron said graciously.
So, he said with a smile as he sat on one of the other tables in the foyer, what is your story then? How did you come to be here in Auckland with no money and sleeping on the side of my apartment complex?
I looked at Aaron and we both chuckled.
Well, where do you want me to start? I asked.
At the beginning, of course, the man said as he threw up his hand. As he sat attentively, Aaron and I described the bullet points of our journey. I told him how I'd lost my girlfriend and my job. We told him we'd saved up what little money we'd had and left pretty much on a whim, that we'd hitchhiked and train-hopped our way through Europe. We told him about the rides with drug dealers in Switzerland and sharing a bridge with an emu in Italy, about me meeting a girl in Germany who I wish I could have stayed with, and Aaron meeting a girl in Thailand who he still talked to and hoped to see again someday. I told him about my friends Adriano and Salvador from the restaurant near the nature preserve, who did their best to teach me every Italian swear word they could think of. We told him about our friend Corey, who had stayed with us through the toughest part of the trip in Europe, but left after arriving in Asia. He laughed as I told him stories of our Indian friends back in Bangkok, probably still throwing parties for any conceivable occasion. Of our buddy Paul, who was most likely still smoking joints at his desk in the hostel in Koh Phangan. He asked several probing questions after we told him of Mark, who'd lived with monks in Myanmar and taught us how to meditate. Then we went on to describe our Australian road trip with an eccentric British couple, outback camping trips and a friendly dog named Mango. Finally, we told him how we'd missed our flight 2 weeks ago and how we'd made it to the South Island, only to find despair and disaster in Tekapo. Afterwards, we told him we'd spent the last of our money on a flight here to Auckland so we could catch a flight home. I finished my long tangent and paused for a moment. Basically, we've managed to screw up at every conceivable turn and create a disaster of monumental proportions out of this trip, although I suppose the trip was probably doomed to begin with, considering our finances at the start.
If you could go back and do this again, what would you change? What is your biggest regret from all of it?
He asked with an inquisitive smile. That's when it hit me. Nothing. I guess I wouldn't change any of it. I mean, it's kind of laughable, really.
Then you have succeeded. At the very least, you'll make your friends laugh at your stories, no?
Oh, they'll definitely laugh, yeah.
And you feel you've found what you're looking for?
I'm not sure, really.
You know the answer to that with time, I think.
Maybe.
Well, I must go to work now. I want you to think about this when you're on your flight home. While I am sitting in my boring office all day, I'll be mad with jealousy that you're truly living life. Think about that, my friends. Now, you be careful and have a safe trip home to your families, okay?
End of chapter 33. Chapter 34. Exodus. Los Angeles, California. No one realizes how beautiful it is to travel until he comes home and rests his head on his old familiar pillow. Lin Yutang. November 19th. Los Angeles was everything I'd been dreaming about. My Aunt Donna was an exceptional host. I always had coffee to drink, plenty of food to eat, a comfortable bed, and a hot shower. We went out to eat often, and for the first 5 days in a row on U.S. soil, I ate a cheeseburger every single night. The first night we were back in the U.S., Aaron and I walked to a gas station to buy a bag of tobacco. I sat it on the counter and the clerk rang it up. That'll be $7.22.
$7,
I exclaimed to Aaron. Hey man, it's like 8-something next door, the clerk argued. I laughed. We had paid $65 U.S. for our last bag of tobacco in New Zealand. We found ourselves in a whirlwind of cultural shock after coming home. We had so many strange mannerisms that one acquires when vagabonding around the world. I didn't throw food away. I would eat until I was ready to burst, and then I would eat some more. As I rode in the car with Donna, I found myself looking out the window for suitable sleeping spots. I would see a small space of darkness between two buildings and involuntarily think, "Man, that'd be perfect. There's a store to get water right next door, too." She took us to the opera one night. I tried to explain to her that we'd been living out of a backpack for over 5 months, and during that time had worn the same 3 shirts and 2 pairs of shorts. Attire at the opera is generally suits, tuxedos, and fancy dresses. She insisted, however, so we joined her as probably the dirtiest, most out-of-place attendees the LA Opera has ever seen. I'm honestly surprised they even let us into the building in our filthy shorts and t-shirts. Aaron left after a few days and flew to Phoenix. I had the whole spare bedroom and bathroom to myself, and I could come and go as I pleased. Donna and I made excellent roommates, and I spent the next month living happily with her. We watched our favorite TV shows together, went out to eat or visited my cousins, her daughters, and joined them for Thanksgiving dinner. I was already feeling right at home. Before I knew it, Blake and Allie arrived. We experienced a joyous reunion before heading to Phoenix to pick up Aaron, and then north to Flagstaff, where we stayed with a friend of mine. From there, we headed to the Grand Canyon so Blake and Allie could see it for the first time. That is one sight I'll never get tired of seeing. With such a profound new perspective on life, it was even more beautiful than ever. We drove through the Rockies in the middle of a giant blizzard, which consumed the entire western half of the United States, and stayed near Boulder, Colorado. The next morning we started driving and didn't stop until we made it to Ohio. We crossed the border to our home state on December 9th, 169 days since we had crossed its opposite side heading towards New York. When I finally made it back to my house, I was in a daze. Mostly from lack of sleep, probably. Blake and Allie dropped me off at my front door. I unloaded my stuff and gave them both a hug. I thanked them for everything they'd done and explained how I didn't know if I'd ever be able to fully repay them. Then I walked across the yard to my parents' house. Tears were in everyone's eyes as we saw each other for the first time in so many months. I talked to them for a long while and then walked back over to my own house. Then I did something I'd thought about for months and months. A moment I had dreamed of time and time again. A moment I'd longed for. I pulled back my thick comforter and slid into my own bed. The most comfortable bed in the fucking world. Trust me, I know. Aaron and I didn't, and still don't, talk very much after arriving home. He was only home for a few short months before returning to Thailand to reunite with Luk Thao. Any notions I had of her thus far have proven to be incorrect, for they seemed very happy together. He stayed in Thailand as long as he could before his visa ran out. He's currently in Australia working on a shrimp boat, assumedly until he can enter Thailand again. My friends who have been, quote, in the loop on the happenings of this book have asked me the obvious question you're probably thinking right now as well. Does Aaron know you're writing this stuff about him? Usually followed by, he's probably going to hate you, you know. To answer the first question, yes. He was fully aware before I even sat down to write this book that A, the book was being written, and more importantly, B, there were going to be embarrassing things about him in it. I was very straightforward with him before asking him to sign a release. I told him the truth, that I was writing a book and would honestly and accurately depict the exact events as they had happened, at least to the best of my recollection. I did my best to write objectively about everything, but granted, this is our story written from my point of view. I'm sure he has plenty of complaints about me as well that I don't even know about. After all, he was better at keeping his annoyances to himself than I was at most times. Yes, he may hate me after reading this, but I hope not. I would never have asked him to change because he is who he is and a lot of people love him for those qualities. They just don't mesh well with my own personality type. Nothing I've said in this book is a lie. Every single detail of this story is true, even the dates. I kept tedious track of our adventure in my journal as it was happening. I have not gone out of my way to make him look bad in this book, as some will inevitably say. Trust me, there are many things I have excluded for his sake simply because they were either not funny or not relevant enough to the stories at hand. I've portrayed everything exactly as it happened. The truth is that before we left, neither Corey nor I were aware of who Aaron was, really. There were many things I did which certainly drove him crazy, just as I complained of him doing to me. After you spend every day for 6 months with someone, you find which quirks annoy each other, and, well, Aaron and I both had a lot of those. I still consider Aaron a friend and wish him all the best. He's found love with Luk Thao, and I think he deserves every bit of the happiness they have together. As for my other travel companion, Corey, well, you've heard of his tale of heartache since returning home. In all, he spent only 2 months with us out of the 6 months total we were gone, but he played a huge role in our story. He's still one of my best friends and joins me at plenty of shows on the cajon drum. He remains a stepfather to his ex-girlfriend's 2 children. The guy is a better father to those kids than most of the fathers I know are to their own children. So far, he's stayed separated from Katie. He says to this day that he doesn't regret leaving our trip early. He didn't know whether he was making the right decision at the time, but he did what he thought was best for him and Katie. I only wish that I can someday have a fraction of the heart that guy has. As for my own saga of heartbreak, the trip mended my wounds, but the scar would remain for some time after. Shortly after returning home, Samantha actually married the guy she'd cheated on me with, which stung. But when she showed up at one of my shows a few months later with a different guy on her arm while still, quote, happily married to the first, I started to look at things differently. For so long I had viewed her cheating as a result of my own shortcomings or even just her being downright cold-hearted. But after seeing her repeat the same behavior with other partners, I began to believe it was the result of deeper issues that she's dealt with during most of her life. We all have our own emotional struggles, and sometimes we don't deal with them as well as we should. It took a long time of being angry and hurt, but I eventually found a way to understand and forgive her in my own conscience and move on. When I returned home, I thought I was done traveling for a long while. I loved the comforts of being home. It took me months to get over being able to walk to my fridge and grab food whenever I wanted it. I spent the first 4 months building an addition onto my house, space for an office and home recording studio. I continued to play music for a living as well as do a little graphic design on the side. I got a puppy, a beagle named Louie. I tried to find love again. I finally quit smoking, for real this time. No, really. Seriously, I did. It was a hard winter those first few months at home. The worst one we've had in my whole life. The older folks were all saying it was the worst since the big blizzard that hit Ohio back in the 70s. As I battled sub-zero temperatures and built onto my house, I scrolled through my Facebook feed and saw my Australian and Kiwi friends post pictures of beaches and barbecues. Thanks to hostels, couch surfing, and hitchhiking, I had friends from all over the world now to inspire me, and it made me sick with jealousy. I stood no chance. Before I knew it, I was lost in daydreams again. I started trying to quench my thirst for adventure. I went skydiving. I took my dog and backpacked nearby state or national parks when I could. I took a random trip to Boston and slept in my car for a week. But none of those things soothed the addiction I had acquired. After a mere 5 months of being home, I started planning my escape. I resurrected Artists Abroad under a new name, Tune Up and Travel. Something that was all mine. I started writing about my travel stories, tips for traveling musicians, tips for budget or adventure travelers, anything that interested me and related to my readers. I became honest with myself and finally admitted that I'm not happy with freezing winter temperatures in Ohio. I decided I would head to South America, and from there, who knows? Learning from the faults and mistakes on my last trip, I bought new equipment which would bring my pack weight down and provide useful solutions to problems which had plagued me on the road the last time. I sold my truck and bought a cheap little gas-saving hatchback I dubbed my vegan lesbian mom-mobile. But some things never change. I'm set to depart in a couple of months, and do you want to guess how much money I've saved up so far? $11.36. I'll figure it out. I'm not doing donations this time around. I always felt shitty about that, taking charity from people. I'll work my way around wherever I go, whether it's with my computer or my guitar. I'll take shit as it comes and deal with it accordingly. Maybe one day I'll grow up and get a real job again. I don't know. I don't plan shit, as you know very well by now. I just wing it. I have no intentions, however, on traveling the way I did with Aaron and Corey. I have no desire to sleep under bridges or in culverts ever again. I consider the entire trip a gigantic learning experience. I don't regret a single thing, and I would do it all again in a heartbeat, puking under a bridge included. Why? Well, for one, because it makes a great story. But I won't sit here and act like all of that stuff was enjoyable, as I'm sure you could tell while you read it. So, when I leave again, I'll be aiming for keeping a roof over my head and food in my belly. I think I could have supported myself on the income I was making towards the end of the trip with Aaron. It was supporting two people that wasn't possible. At the very least, now I somewhat know what I'm getting myself into when I leave with very little money. Only time will tell how the next experience will go. I set off on my journey with Aaron and Corey to find answers about life and see the world. I wanted to know if I was living my life right. I don't know that all my questions were answered, but I know I changed for the better, as almost always happens with travel, and that I'll never look at the world the same. At the beginning of this story, I asked the question, why? Why did I do it? I think that question has been answered if I were to do so as simply as possible. I was running away. Is that really a bad thing, though? When I ran away, I found answers to questions I didn't even know I was asking. I learned that humans are kind by nature. The world is not scary and evil like we're led to believe growing up. It's a beautiful planet filled with beautiful people who want nothing more than to love and be loved. I probably don't have the answers you're looking for. You'll have to take your own journey to get those. But before I take off on a hike with my pup Louie in a minute, I'll share with you a passage from my journal which I wrote on the mountainside in Tekapo, where I found parts of myself I didn't even know existed. When I had nothing but time to think about life, this is what I found. All those who travel will change. They will realize things about themselves and others. The world at large will lift its mystic veil and reveal a glimpse of itself. It's not just you and your little town. It's everyone in a world filled with little towns. There is no single secret or purpose of life, because life is different for everyone. What is best for me may not bring you happiness, and vice versa. True happiness is finding what you're looking for, whatever that might be. Happiness is never ceasing to dream. Happiness is family and friends who love and support you. Happiness is living life with no regrets. Life is happiness, and living to be happy is true living. Live, love completely, and travel often. Relax and enjoy the ride. The end. Acknowledgements. First and foremost, I'd like to thank my travel companions, Aaron and Corey, for giving me permission to write about them and share our story. I'd like to thank all of our friends and family who donated to us or helped us out in any way. You guys are the reason we made it home without starving to death. Seriously. I want to thank my mom and dad for everything they've done and continue to do for me, for showing me unwavering support and love in all of my foolhardy and spontaneous endeavors. Lastly, I want to thank all of the kind strangers, some of them now close friends, who helped us out along the way. Whether it was a ride, a meal, a 2 euro coin, a bed, a shower, or just a smile and a nice word. Thank you for everything you've given me, both tangible and spiritual. If you enjoyed this book, it would help me tremendously if you could take a moment to review it on Audible and Amazon. If you didn't, well then hey, you can fuck right off, buddy. Just kidding, please don't leave me a bad review. About the author. I now live in Los Angeles, where I continue to write and record music, travel or visit the outdoors whenever possible, and write books or screenplays. Read about current adventures, get music or travel tips or more stories at tuneupandtravel.com. Or you can check out my music at tomedwardsmusic.com. If you'd like to really crack into some budget travel tips, check out the latest book I published in 2016, $2 to Timbuktu. The Ultimate Guide for Extraordinary Adventures Around the World on an Ordinary Bank Account. Well, that's my story. Thanks for putting up with my horrible accents and terrible acting. I hope you've enjoyed the book. Cheers. Planes, Trains, and Broken Strings. The Laughable But True Story of an Impoverished Indie Musician Traveling the World.
Written and narrated by Tom Edwards. The end.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.